You are listening to the Political Periscope, a weekly podcast brought to you by Radio WNET. Interviews on international politics, security, geopolitics, economy, and more. Every Thursday at 7 p.m.
Today's guest of the Political Periscope is Peter Westerbacka, entrepreneur, startup creator, and former CMO of Rovio Entertainment Corporation.
Political Periscope.
Today's guest of Radio WNET is Mr. Peter Westerbacka, entrepreneur, innovator. How else can I call you?
Yeah, that's a good start. But like entrepreneur first and foremost, so I think that's the most important thing. Yeah.
We came here to Helsinki from Tallinn, and we came on board of a ferry. But I hope in the future we will just drive here.
Yeah, or actually you'll get on train and 20 minutes later you'll be in Helsinki. So that's the plan. So we're building the tunnel to connect Helsinki and Tallinn. And this is a very important piece of infrastructure, piece of connectivity here in the finest Bay Area. So we're now in Helsinki and you know, Tallinn not far away. But if you look at then the bigger picture, we have Finland, we have Estonia, we have Sweden around this little body of water here. And it's the most successful region on the planet when it comes to startups, when it comes to number of unicorns per capita, the most venture capital invested into startups per capita. So much more successful than, you know, say Silicon Valley or China or any place on the planet. So that's why we need the tunnel. We need to be able to cope with the future growth.
A future growth, but there is also a future issue. There is a issue of age in Europe. We are becoming older and older as a society. How to deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, we are dealing it with creating gravity. So we are making sure that this will be the most attractive place you know, to live, to start a company, to study. So we have been working very, very hard to attract more international students to our universities, but not only to our universities, also to our high schools, to our vocational schools. So we have started teaching Finnish language in over 20 countries to young people, 15, 16, 17 year old, you know, young people in Vietnam, in Uzbekistan, but now we have expanded that to the US, Canada, Brazil, Chile, Mexico, Malaysia, Indonesia, Namibia, you know, Cameroon, Nigeria, Tanzania, so many places we're teaching the Finnish language. And fortunately, it's very easy to learn Finnish. So in half a year, you learn B1.1 level, then you can apply to high school here in Finland, and then you continue for a few more months, and then you come to Finland and you do your high school or vocational school in Finnish language. And when you learn Finnish, we offer that education completely tuition-free. So it's a win-win. We get fantastic talent that can come to Finland and build their life here. And we offer the young people fantastic education. And I think this is something that we need to do in all of Europe. And of course, we also need to look at what we can do when it comes to kind of like, you know, birth rates and all that. But that's, of course, everybody understands that that is not like a quick fix to the current like demographical like problems. So we need to do the kind of things that we are doing here, which is, again, attracting young people from all over the planet to come to the happiest nation on the planet.
What happened in the first place that made Finland so successful in the field of startups and new technologies?
Yeah, I think that a very important foundation is education. So we have a fantastic educational system here, all levels. We have, you know, starting with fantastic kindergartens and then all the way through to fantastic universities. So I think that is like very important. And that is something that has taken a long time to build. And of course, that is never ready. That continues. We're making sure that we're improving our educational system, you know, like every day, every year. But I think that another thing that is very important, that I always say, that who cares if you have the best education on the planet? You also need to do something with that education. And of course, that's where entrepreneurship comes in. And in 2008, we started Slush. So that is the biggest and best startup event on the planet. But Slush actually started because we had to do something. I gave a talk 2007, 600 students, all to university. And I was talking about startups. I was talking about entrepreneurship. And I asked the students, how many of you are going to start a company or, you know, join a startup once you graduate or even before? You know, that's fine as well. And in 2007, when I asked the question, only 3 out of 600 students raised their hand. And that's, of course, you know, like a disaster. Everybody just wanted to go and work for Nokia or Wärtsilä or Kone or even the government, you know, the big guys. And we all know that that's not where innovation comes from. The new ideas typically come from the smaller, you know, companies. And we all know what happened, you know, with the dinosaurs, you know, the small furry animals took over. And I always say that we need some more of the small furry animals. So we had to start Slush to change the mindset. And that's actually then what happened 5 years after starting Slush. I went back to Aalto, same talk, same question, more than half the hands went up. And if you ask young people here in Finland or in Estonia or in Sweden, anybody here in the finest Bay Area, more than half will say that, yes, I'm going to start a company. I'm going to make the next Angry Birds, the next Supercell, the next Spotify. You know, that's what they want to do. And I think that this is very, very important. And I think this is really kind of like a big ingredient in the success of the whole finest Bay Area. So not just Finland, that we have invested in education, but we have also then gotten people excited about changing the world. I mean, that's what entrepreneurs are all about, you know, and changing the world best way is through startups, through business. And that is what our young people are focused on. They are starting companies to make the world a better place.
I don't have exact statistics, but mm-hmm. I remember reading that the case of startups that are very successful, so-called unicorns, those mm-hmm. are just the minority. Mm-hmm. And however, most of startups, they end in failure.
Of course.
Isn't it somehow a false hope for young people that they can start a company and make millions?
No, but I mean, it's again, of course, not all companies become unicorns, but also if you look at, take Estonia, 1.3 million people, 10 unicorn companies. I mean, that's like amazing. But of course, not all startups become unicorns, but many startups become successful. Okay, even more startups become not so successful and they actually fail. But I mean, that's just like also in life. That, you know, like when you try new things more often than not, they fail. But then you have to try and try again, and then eventually you will be successful. I think that's kind of like how it typically works, that it's a little bit like learning to walk, that none of us, you know, just got up and we started walking. We tried to get up, we fell, we tried to get up, we fell, and then eventually we learn how to walk, to run, and everything. So it's very, very important to have that kind of mindset. And again, I think that young people understand that of course many will fail, but then, you know, you try again, and there's nothing wrong in, you know, trying and failing. Then, you know, after a while you figure it out. You know, it's, you know, also called learning by doing. So I think that's the best way to learn. And this is something that I think is very, very important, that, you know, it's also, you know, to use like an ice hockey analogy that we always have to do in Finland, that you can be sure that you will for sure you will miss the shots that you are not taking. It's the same, of course, in football and basketball and that if you don't even try, you will not score. And you have to try. And this is, you know, part of entrepreneurship and the mindset that we instill in the young people here. That's part of the education. That's part of, like, society, that, you know, it's okay to go out there, try, fail, and then boom, you know, you build something that is, you know, massively successful. So I think this is something that is very important. So it's definitely not false hope. You have to be realistic. Not everybody will be super successful like immediately. But we also have a fantastic track record here. We have more startups per capita, more unicorns per capita, more venture capital invested per capita than anywhere else in the world. I mean, if you look at the OECD numbers from last year, you know, venture capital invested into startups per capita. Estonia was number one in the world, Finland number two, Lithuania number three, Sweden number four, and our American friends number five, which is, you know, not too bad. So I think that this is something that is a very, very good indication of the gravity, you know, the attractiveness of the local startups. People want to invest because they believe that the startups here will be successful. And again, not all of them, but many will be. And I think that is kind of like what is important here.
And what about traditional heavy industry mm-hmm. that also has still its place in the world, and we moved it to China, to India, and what with it in Europe?
Yeah, but I think that we have, of course, there is a role for big corporations and bigger companies. I mean, there's some businesses, some industries where you need to have scale, and that's not going away. But I think also there, we're moving up the value chain like all the time. And, it's again something that made sense to make here, some years ago. Maybe now it doesn't make sense. And then it goes to China, to India, to Vietnam, to, places where they are moving up the value chain and they can produce these things now, more cost efficiently. They can produce them better than we can. So I think that's just like natural. And this is also like the whole concept of, this kind of like division of labor and specialization, that we can't do everything. I mean, we can make anything here, but it doesn't make sense to do everything. So you have to specialize, you have to do what you're good at. And I think that that's kind of like just part of like the global, world and the global economy, that it doesn't make sense to make everything everywhere, and we need to specialize. And I think that that's why it's, let's say, unfortunate that we now have, the war in the Ukraine, and we have, the pandemic that has had, a big impact on the global supply chains. But I really think that it's a good wake-up call. Also, we need to make these global supply chains more resilient, and that is something that also the war in the Ukraine is proving, like with the food and the whole agriculture business, that we really need to think about how to make all of this. And okay, let's not even talk about energy. I mean, everybody understands that's like a big challenge, that if you're dependent on our evil, Russian neighbors for your energy needs, obviously that is not like a good idea, and we need to remove these kind of dependencies. That's not good for any of us to be dependent on that. So I think that, again, there's a lot to do. The world is not ready, but we'll make it better.
Like we are also all dependent on Taiwanese microchips.
True. But I think that is also one thing that. Again, it's not very easy to replicate. Now there's the CHIP Act here and there, US, Europe, all of that. But I think that we should also understand that it's not something that you can replicate like overnight. It will take years, maybe even tens of years, so to do that. So again, it's a much better idea to kind of like address the core problem, and we all know where the core of the problem is in this. So that's again geopolitics, and we have some not so nice nations, so we need to kind of like deal with that, and we need to be firm and like then make sure that people follow the rules and don't kind of like kill their neighbors.
You've mentioned war in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. What is your opinion? Do you share this sentiment of Finnish nation against Russia?
Yeah, I mean, basically, we are not against anybody, but it seems like some people are against other people, and I think that, of course, we see now what happens when we haven't been firm and we have let Russia get away with doing evil things, in many places over the years. And this is again, now Russia has to be stopped. It's very clear that Ukraine needs to win the war, has to win the war. And that's, I think now nobody has any illusions about Russia and the intent of the evil Russian regime. And I think that this is something that is now clear, that that evil needs to be stopped, or it will come for the rest of us. And I think that is very clear here in Finland. It's very clear, of course, in the Baltics, in Eastern Europe, much more recent experience of the Russian oppression. And I think that this is again something that for us living in these liberal Western democracies, that we need to stand up for what we believe in, and we need to fight, the evil Russian regime, and it has to be stopped in the Ukraine.
And what do you think about those IT companies or those people with very high skills living in Russia, some of them openly condemned Putin's Putin and the war in Ukraine, but some of them are silent or, well, appear to be okay with the situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very tricky situation, but I think that we should support and we should help all the smart people in Russia escape and get out of there. So I think that that is something that is very, very important. We need to have maximum brain drain. So all the smart people in Russia, you know, very welcome to come to Finland, come to Europe, you know, get out of there, you know, before it's too late. But I think it's also a problem to say, you know, and voice your opinion in Russia. You know, if you mention war, you end up in you know, prison very quickly. So again, also, you know, have a bit of sympathy for, you know, people staying silent. So understand that, you know, it's not so easy in these nations where, you know, you don't have freedom, you don't have, you know, any rights. So, you know, it's very clear that Russia is a fascist state and, you know, it's not so easy. But I think that we need to help the people get out of there before it's too late. And I have many friends, many Russian friends, and they are definitely not supporting the genocide that is taking place in the Ukraine, you know, totally the opposite. And I think that we need to do whatever we can to help the people get out of there. I think that is something that is very important. But at the same time, we shouldn't, you know, basically ignore the fact that many people are supporting the war. And I think that that is, you know, it's totally not acceptable that they can travel freely. So I think that that needs to be stopped. And we need to also be very tough on people, you know, supporting the war in any form or shape in Russia or anywhere else. So I think that we need to be very, very tough. And that is something that, you know, now there shouldn't be any illusion about the intent of the Russian regime.
Let's get back to technology.
Yes.
You were involved with one of the probably most addictive mobile games. Mm-hmm. What do you think about those risks?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, again, here in Finland, we've been very, very successful with, you know, mobile games, and a big chunk of the global mobile games business is actually done out of this tiny little country called Finland with 5.5 million people. But we have a lot of talent in the games industry, so it's quite likely that you will see many, many more success stories. So not just Rovio and Angry Birds, but we already, you know, Supercell, Small Giant Games, many, many more studios working on the next big thing. So I think that, you know, it's a very, you know, hit-driven business, like, you know, most of entertainment. So games is no exception. But when you have the kind of talent density and the kind of deep, deep talent pool that we have here in Finland, we have now like 5,000 or so people working in the games industry. We're adding 1,500 every year. That's a big number, even, you know, globally. So we can expect to see many, many more success stories coming out of Finland and like the whole finest Bay Area when it comes to games. So I think that, you know, it's the right place to be if you want to make the next big thing.
Yes, but the risks of technology, like very addictive aspect of mobile games for example, social isolation and other things that are, well, prominent among especially young people.
Yeah, but I think that there, you know, it's not just isolation and all of that. And if you look at, you know, people now playing games, many of the games they are playing online, they are playing with their friends. So something that we look at as a very like isolated, solitary like experience is actually quite the opposite. It's very social, very interactive. Interacting with people all over the planet. So I think that it's not, you know, like black and white. And I think that if you look at games, you can learn anything by playing games. So I think that this is something that we should also kind of keep in mind. And I think that, you know, it's really an untapped opportunity to really start designing much better learning experience, learning experiences in the form of games. So I think that there is a much bigger upside than there is downside when we are looking at games, and we can learn a lot from the games industry. And yes, of course, many of the experiences have been designed to bring you back and bring you back again and again and again. So I think that we also should apply the same approach, and I think that it would be fantastic to get people addicted to learning. And I think that we can do that by applying some of the same approaches and the same thinking that has been done in games for years and years.
Well, I have to admit, I really improved my English thanks to computer games.
Yes, totally. And that we see everywhere.
How to make people learn through computer games or mobile games?
I think that we need to bring together the best game designers, the best pedagogues. So I think that that is something that we need to do, and then create learning experiences in the form of games. But it's very difficult to do. I mean, it's difficult to make hit games. It's also difficult to create fantastic learning experiences. But I think that this is something that we need to do. And I think that the example of learning English by playing games is fantastic. I mean, we've been studying that here in Finland since, the 80s. And it turns out that boys speak better English than girls. Why? Because they play more games and the games are in English. So it's not like the boys decide that, we're going to speak better English than girls. It's just because they want to play the games. So the motivation is there. Games are in English. So you learn the language because you have to. And you want to. Maybe that's kind of like a better way to frame it, that you really are motivated to learn because you want to play the games. And I think that if we can apply the same approach to learning in general, I think that we can make learning fun and we can make it more effective. And I think that is really kind of like the future of learning, and that's where we need to go.
Are all Finns as open and talkative and creative as you?
I don't think that we can never kind of like generalize, and maybe Finns are known for being a bit less talkative, but I think that there's always the talkative Finns and the more quiet Finns, and I don't know if I'm like exception to the rule or something like that, but I think that you will find many people here in Finland that talk a lot. Of course, you might find even more that talk a bit less, but it's also kind of like an interesting culture here in Finland that we are also perfectly fine with being silent. So we could sit here now for like an hour and say nothing, and for me as a Finn, it's perfectly fine. I wouldn't feel awkward. It's perfectly okay. And I think that probably I'm a bit of the exception to the rule there, but you will find people here, and you'll find Finns that talk a lot, but hopefully they don't only talk a lot, but also they talk about things that they actually know about, and we're not just talking for talking sake, but we talk because we have something to say. And when we don't have something to say, we're perfectly okay to shut up and be quiet.
What does it mean to be a Finn?
I think that to be a Finn means to be yourself. I think this is also why Finland is the happiest nation on the planet, because we don't interfere with other people's life, and we let people be themselves. And I think this is something that is very important, because we're always asked that, how is it possible that Finland, happiest nation 5 years in a row according to the UN? And I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that here you can be yourself, and people will not interfere with your daily life unless you ask them to do so. But I think that that is very, very important. So to be a Finn is to be yourself.
I'm the happiest nation despite all of the darkness in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, climate and darkness and cold or warm days, don't really affect your happiness kind of like that much. So I think that, it's very, and Finnish people will, of course, that can't be true, what about the weather? And I think that if the weather is your biggest problem, then, things are pretty much okay. I know many countries where they would be super happy if they could talk only about the weather. But, there are many bigger problems in the world, and many places that I visited, and I travel like half the time, they are telling me that they would be super happy if they could just talk about the weather.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The guest of Radio Vnet was Peter Vesterbacka. entrepreneur from Finland.
You are listening to the Political Periscope, a weekly podcast brought to you by Radio WNET. Interviews on international politics, security, geopolitics, economy, and more. Every Thursday at 7 p.m.
Today's guest of the Political Periscope is Peter Westerbacka, entrepreneur, startup creator, and former CMO of Rovio Entertainment Corporation.
Political Periscope.